You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Howdy, hour number two, Comedy Alive from a Quicken Loans studio. National Mortgage Lender, Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully. Mortgage confidently on this Tuesday across the country. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio and CBS Sports Network on the simulcast, of course. Sirius XM 206 on Twitter, Tiki and Tierney, at Tiki Barber, at Brandon Tierney. So Kyler Murray, you heard that in the open. That was from yesterday's show. Tiki and I were kicking that around when he decided to put his name in the mix for the NFL draft. And he's got decisions to make. Options are good, but they could also become very weighty if you don't handle it the right way. And we thought Samter came up with this great idea. We all remember Josh Booty, depending upon how old you are. But Josh was a tremendous, he's one of the golden boy high schools, you know, great quarterback, great baseball player. Goes to LSU, plays quarterback there for a couple of years, gets drafted fifth or sixth round out of LSU as a quarterback. He was also the fifth overall pick in baseball. So he has already done what Kyler Murray is thinking about doing. And we said, let's find out how tough it is and talk to Josh Booty, who's with us now on Tiki and Tierney. Josh, how are you today?
I'm doing wonderful, guys. I appreciate you guys having me on. And this is an unbelievable story. And it kind of all happened this year, and Kyler bust on the scene, especially in baseball. You know, I'd seen him play football, but his baseball prowess, you know, came to pass. It was pretty awesome to see him kind of turn into the superstar that he is.
Hey, Josh, have you seen him play baseball? Because we've talked to a couple of Major League Baseball executive scouts, radio-type people, and asked them about Kyler Murray, and they don't really have a consensus on what kind of baseball player.
I had some guys that are buddies of mine play against him and coach against him, and they said he's an extraordinary talent because of his speed, especially on defense. And he hit 10 home runs in 50-something games. I was looking at his stats, and, of course, he didn't strike out too much. So, that's kind of an indication of what's to come, I think, is he's got a little power, he's got a lot of speed, and probably plays great defense. So he's a guy that could turn into an everyday player at the big league level, I suppose, if he gave it a couple years. And that's the real key, is you got to give it a couple years and work through the minors and you know, have a lot of at-bats and get those under your belt.
Yeah. No. Now, Josh, you tried this. You drafted in the NBA, or in NFL, and also in Major League Baseball, and you subsequently went on to say, I was an idiot for trying to marry the two, especially because it's playing quarterback. It's one thing if you're Bo Jackson or Deion Sanders, but playing quarterback in the NFL and trying to simultaneously have a baseball career, it just seems very, very daunting.
Very difficult. I heard Deion Sanders say something yesterday, said it's impossible to do what he's trying to do if he's trying to do them at the same time, and I agree with that. As a kid, I grew up, I wanted to be the first ever guy, and I was watching John Elway and saw him play minor league ball, and he didn't make it past high A ball. He went strictly to football, but I wanted to be the first guy to ever play, you know, professional baseball and professional football in the same calendar year. And I think at the quarterback position, it's just way too involving. You're the CEO, you're the face of the franchise, you're like the head coach. You've got to be in the building, and at that position, if you helicopter out and going somewhere else, then the team can't rely on you. So that position is the only position in sports that I think that it can't be done, where you play the same week, kind of like Deion did, where he flew in and, you know, he was with the Falcons, flew over and played in the World Series or the NLCS. I mean, you just can't do that at the quarterback position, because everybody's counting on you to run the team as a quarterback. You got to know everybody else's responsibilities as you do your own.
It just seems way too much to juggle. I'm with you. Josh Booty, of course, with us here on Tiki and Tierney. Josh, former quarterback at LSU, fifth overall pick back in 94. He got some at-bats in the show, couple of hits, so you did play. You know, you're a baseball cube and baseball reference. We got you there. And let me ask you this. From just sheer diagnosing, like, you know, the one thing, it's changed a little bit. But what I always heard with baseball is that generally you want to get about 2,000 at-bats at each level to really – this is kind of an antiquated thought from scouts, but back in the day that's what they used to say, 2,000 at-bats to get a sense of the different types of pitches. Do you think it's harder to diagnose a complex defense, all right, as a quarterback, or to lay off a nasty biting slider or darting changeup? Both seem very daunting. What do you think is tougher?
Yeah, I think it depends on the kind of athlete you are. You know, as a as a runner in the new RPO, the way that things are done offensively in college football and kind of trickling into the NFL, I think that makes it a little easier on an athlete, on a quarterback. He doesn't have to drop back every play and make a read. He doesn't have the seven-step drop back that like Elway and those guys had to do in the past. The game has changed, and they get the ball out so fast now. They don't take unnecessary hits, and the league has changed where they protect the quarterback. So I think it's a little easier than it was 5 or 10, 15, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think the game's changing, and that's in his favor. There's no doubt about it, because he can beat you with his legs as he can his arm, and he can outside the pocket as well. He can hurt you. I just think the baseball thing, if he was to sit out a couple years and try to play in the NFL and it didn't work out for him or he got injured, I think you can't take more than 2 or 3 years away from baseball. It just almost becomes impossible to go back into the saddle and tie up the cleats and think you're going to hit a 95-mile-an-hour fastball or an 89-mile-an-hour slider or, lay off the breaking balls or, I think it's really tough. Tebow's trying to do it, which is very, very difficult. No one's ever done it like that. Mm-hmm. It would be a once in a lifetime deal, but he seemed to be okay doing it. So I'm not going to say Kyler couldn't do it if he went and played football for 3 or 4 years. It didn't work out, and he went back over to the baseball side. He's that athletic. I know that. Mm-hmm. And, he isn't a pitcher, so he's not – it's not like he's going to lose 10 miles an hour in his velocity, and it really matters. At center field, he's going to be an athlete no matter what. So I think he's in the perfect situation to, if he did go and try the football thing, which it sounds like he's going to do, that he could go back and play baseball in 2 or 3 years. I just wouldn't sit out 5, 6, 7 years, because I think then it's impossible to play baseball after missing that much time and not being around hitting and doing those types of things every day.
Yeah. You mentioned Tebow. I mean, what out of curiosity, quite frankly, Josh, I'm very surprised and very impressed that he's actually hitting some home runs. I mean, a lot of them go the other way, which means he's probably a tick late on fastballs, and Blandy he looks awful catching the ball in the outfield. He's got a horrible arm, just like he did when he played quarterback. But can he actually get better? Like, what is his baseball ceiling?
Well, like you said, most scouts used to say you need 2,000 at-bats in the minor leagues to work your way up and just get a feel for baseball as a hitter. And I think that's changed a little bit because – kids nowadays play so many more games leading up to their professional careers. Mm-hmm. We used to play 20, 30 games in Little League and high school, and that was it. There was no travel ball and all that they got now, perfect game and all that. I think Tebow's just a rare breed of athlete that he's so strong and physically gifted and he works so hard at his craft that he just wills it. I'm telling you, he wills half of his stuff. He wills it into existence, and that sounds funny and crazy, but he's that athletic, and he's a better hitter than Michael Jordan was going to be.
Yep.
He's doing it, and I think him being left-handed it helps him a little bit because you're closer to first base. He's got some speed. He can leg out a couple of hits that gives you a little bit better numbers at the end of the year. When you could be hitting 230, you might hit 250.
True.
So I think a lot of it has to play with the kind of athlete he is. He's strong enough to, if he gets fisted, to maybe get a couple hits here and there, and then he can leg out a couple. I mean, just a different type of guy, and so. It'd be fun to see him make the big leagues. I'm a Tebow guy. I think he's an incredible athlete. Just to try to pull off what he's doing, and then how headstrong do you have to be to put yourself in that situation?
He cut out for a sec. Josh is still with us. Josh, he's not only an incredible athlete, he's just an incredible person. Yeah. I mean, it's so easy to root for Tim. We love Tim Tebow on this show. We're with you. Josh Booty, former LSU quarterback, former fifth overall pick back in 94, talking about what Kyler Murray stares. Yep. And he's with us here. He's with us here on TV.
And Josh, this is Broadcasting 101, what you don't do, but I'm going to ask two questions. One, if you had to do it all over again, what would you do? Would you focus on football? Would you focus on baseball? And if you're advising Kyler, what are you telling him?
Well, his situation's a little better for himself because he knew he would be wildly successful coming back and playing a year at Oklahoma. He won the Heisman, which is just like icing on the cake. But he knew that Lincoln Riley and what they had and all the talent, Baker Mayfield and what he did the year before, it was a huge positive for him coming into the season. All he had to do was just don't mess it up, right? I mean, he's driving a Ferrari with all those guys around him, and he's always going to be better than everybody he plays until they play in a playoff type of thing, which happened to him against Bama. But if I'm, and like I said, the NFL is a safer bet now because as a quarterback, he can potentially go in the first round and make a whole lot more money than he would on the baseball side of things. And it sounds funny to say NFL is a safer bet financially, but in this case, it might be, which is really funky. We've never seen this before in our lifetime. And I don't know if we'll ever see it again, but I always thought a guy like Michael Vick or something would be the only kind of guy that could ever play two, at the same time, or ever be drafted, this high up in two sports, a guy that's just so physically gifted and fast and speedy. And Kyler Murray has that kind of in his game. He's just got a lot of question marks with his height, and I worry about GMs and what they're really going to say behind closed doors about him, because he's fixing to get the kitchen sink thrown at him in ways he's probably never, had thrown at him before, just his height and weight and arm strength, because they're fixing to take a real good look at it.
Yeah, no, what would you have done? What would you have rather done? What would you have rather
been? I'm a football guy. I think he's a lot like me. I mean, he signed for 4.55 and came back to play his junior year. He could have got crushed and ended both careers. I wanted to play football the whole time, and I cried when I signed my no football clause in my contract, but I knew it was too much money to say no to, so I had to do it.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
And live that out, and I think he's just at the point where, hey, football is as good a ticket as baseball is, and he probably can't believe it, probably can't believe it, and he has a football family. His dad was a football player. He just has a love for football. He's got a heart. His heart's just set on it, man. Yeah. He loves it.
Yeah, no, when you do it, there's nothing like walking out on a football field, arena, stadium, whether it's in college or otherwise. And speaking of college, you're the host of Believe in LSU Football, which is a podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. You've also been a coach and done some entrepreneurial things of that nature. First of all, the podcast is it's great, but I'm sure it talks about LSU. And the question that we always have about
when
LSU.
When are you going to get a quarterback?
Exactly. Why is it so hard to get one of these top-end quarterbacks? Back down to LSU nowadays. not back in your
time. You got everything else. Get a quarterback, Josh.
I know it. I knew I was going to get this question when you started talking LSU football, and you're talking to an old quarterback. And that was the thing is, I grew up in the shotgun 4 and 5 wide receiver sets, empty, no huddle, the whole thing. And then when I got to LSU, it was like going back in time and going backwards. And I was under center, and we had the two tights and double eye, and we would go 2-minute offense and have one wide receiver in the formation. It was like, what am I doing? I wish I'd have played in a situation a little different. But LSU's always been ground and pound, play great defense. They're kind of like the Ravens, kind of like that AFC Central type of football thinking. It's old school. It's like you get all those athletes down there, and they got thoroughbreds all over the field. It's like it's easier, I guess, to teach the run game. But now they're going to have to catch up, and that's what they're doing, is having to play catch up. Orgeron's got to get the right people in place to really develop the culture. As you know, it's all done in the off season. It's pitching and catching. It's throwing. It's understanding routes and concepts and being able to have a quarterback that can read it out. And with the RPO stuff, it does make it a little bit more interesting, because there's so many different threats, play threats that you've got in the course of a ball game. Now, we've got to find a guy that can really make decisions on the fly and really get it to the guys around him, because we've got speed at every position. We've got thoroughbreds at wide out. We just got to get a guy that can do it, and I think they've just got to develop that culture. It's going to get a little bit better year in, year out. Hopefully in 3 or 4 years we'll look up and we'll have a team that is super balanced and we can throw the football. Right now, if we get behind, we've been in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
And we've got to get to where we can play from behind if we have to.
Hey, man, I'm really happy we did this. I know you got to get out. You have practice coming up, so go do your thing.
Sure. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Josh.
Informative. Very, very good. Sir. It's a great perspective. Awesome, Josh. Thank you. All right, Josh Booty. Josh Booty. Imagine being that good at
both.
Multiple things. Like,
It seems like you always.
Sometimes I just realize how non-talented I am when I speak to people like this. Oh, my God.
Usually you have to decide
football, baseball.
You never get to this point. He was right. It's so rare. Like, usually you really have to commit to one or the other. And it's rare that we see a Kyler Murray.
Well, his point, and it was a really good one amongst many, is that now there's so much baseball, and kids will play, 60, 70, 80 games a year. Back in the day, you didn't necessarily do that, so you would need the, 2,000, 2,500 at-bats in the minors. Now you can kind of truncate it to an offseason of working on pitch recognition without playing all the games in the minors, and maybe accelerate the. It's still risky, and it's not foolproof, but there is a way to maybe circumvent that, because for a long time, every scout, every organization preached that you know, outside of like a Tony Gwynn or somebody incredibly special, great elite hand-eye coordination, where you got to get reps. You got to go from A-ball. You got to see double-A and triple-A. You got to see the difference. Not just velocity. That's the easy. Anybody can hit a fastball. It's that darting changeup that looks like it's coming right if you're a righty batter, coming at your left knee, and just flashes on the outer portion of home plate. And if you don't see that, you can't practice it.
Right.
It's like never seeing a blitz.
You're right.
I mean, or never having to pick up a linebacker. Mm-hmm. How would you be prepared to do that if you never saw that in your life?
Yeah, you fall on the ground. Hope he trips over you.
Exactly. That was awesome. I really enjoyed that. Was really Josh Booty. There's a name for the past. All right. Coming up next, here's a name of the present and of the future, and also of the past, because Boeheim brought up Barkley, but the present is Zion, and the future is Zion. Do we really buy the Barkley comparison, or is there a better one? Might have one for you. We'll get to it. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227. Brought to you by GEICO. Great news. Switch over to GEICO and just go to geico.com. And in 15 minutes, save 15% or more on car insurance. All right, hopefully you enjoyed the Josh Booty conversation. But that was really good. Very informative. Let's get to a little college hoops here. We kind of touched this on inbounds, out of bounds, but let's reset this. Coach Boeheim with an interesting comparison for Zion Williamson for Duke. Syracuse beat Duke last night at Cameron Indoor. But let's reset this. Let's play this again. Here's Coach Boeheim postgame, then we'll get into it. Go ahead, guys.
Williamson's just, he's hard to handle. He throws some stuff up that's hard and it goes in, really hard. And then when he goes outside and makes those, I mean, that's hard to do. It's hard to defend him. He's a physical specimen. He's like Charles Barkley was, except he shoots better than Charles did. And he's not as fat. But, no, he's a different player. I mean, there's not – I haven't seen many players. I haven't seen really any player like him.
Okay. The Barkley comparison. And, by the way, Tika and I looked at each other. I can't tell. The first thing he says, he throws some hard stuff up there. Does he mean, like, degree of difficulty shots? Or does he mean, like, line drives? Like, I didn't really understand that, but either way.
It's either he's tough to guard because you're pounding him inside and he still gets a shot off. I don't know. It's just, it's weird. I didn't understand it either, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But he does make a ton of interesting and electrifying shots, Zion Williamson. And if you want to compare him to Charles Barkley, they do feel different because Charles was more of he was the hustler, man. You felt like Charles was overachieving. You know, even though he was a great player, you felt like he was hustling all the time. Whereas Zion Williamson just feels like a man amongst boys when you watch him play at this level. He's just so much physically stronger. He looks like a football player.
Yeah. He does.
Like a defensive end more than he looks like a basketball player.
And there were concerns. How would he carry that weight? I mean, 285.
I know.
With the metabolism of a 19-year-old, what happens when Zion Williamson is 26 and 27?
I don't ever see him getting to be like...
Sanders says Oliver Miller. No way.
Yeah, I'm just saying, no you talk way. About the metabolism. When it slows down,
that's what I was getting ready
can
to
he
say,
put on the weight and
ever,
stay healthy?
But I don't ever see him becoming that guy. Because look at his muscular structure.
Mm-hmm.
It's freakish. Mm-hmm. Right? Guys who have that kind of definition. Adrian Peterson's this way. Right when you see Adrian Peterson, just like his arms and his quads, you're like, dude, it's like he's ripped.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't see basketball players that are 285 look that ripped all the time. That's why I say he looks like
Shaq
a football
didn't
player.
Have that.
No, not at all.
He was streamlined, and he was svelte, so to speak, Shaq. But
I mean,
Zion
if he ever got to the point where he was like literally chilling, like not lifting a weight and just eating and retired and doing whatever, I could see him getting fat and heavy.
Yeah, eventually he's going to have to change his eating habits a little bit.
I don't think athletically. As long as he's an athlete, I don't see him becoming sloppy.
What about all the weight on his knees?
I mean, that's what you worry about.
Even now at 285.
Of course. I mean, basketball. Look, I see former basketball players, BT. Yeah. They're more beat up than former football players with their knees because they're jumping. It's the constant jumping and pounding.
You see that a lot. I know what you're talking about.
On hard courts. And, you know, there's only so much cushioning in that meniscus and around those joints and ankles as well. So eventually, if you're that big, it gives. But he's young right now, so we don't see it at all. He still has a spring in all of his ligaments, and you know he's healthy. I do worry though if he should have a serious injury, like a say he tears his ACL or does something to his knee or whatever it may be. Let's hope not. Let's not none of that stuff because you want to see him play. But if something like that should happen, I'd worry about him getting right again because he's just so big. It's the same thing you see with you know, like a Nerlens Noel. You know, he wasn't jacked or heavy, but he's a big man. Mm-hmm. Or Embiid. You're worried about Embiid with his feet.
Yeah.
Right? It just gets hard when you have these lower body extremity lower extremity injuries. Fortunately, he doesn't have any of that, but health, I think, is his biggest obstacle.
Well, I remember when I first saw him, and I don't mean on YouTube. I've been following him on YouTube for a couple of years. He's got like a million Instagram. I mean, even before he went to Duke, he had millions of Instagram followers. He's been on the, you know, the highlight radar for a long time, a couple of years at least. And I remember before I got to really see him play a game, see how he moves without the ball. You know, does he have an IQ? Does he have a little bit of a handle? Does he have a shiftiness? Does he have the components that will, you know, once the dunks eventually go away, can you throw him the ball, not necessarily in the post, but on the left wing, 20 feet out, set a screen and let him operate and do his thing? And I wasn't sure. And the more I watch him, my answer is absolutely yes. And I remember when I first saw him, I had a combination. I saw Larry Johnson, definitely saw Larry Johnson, even though, you know, Grandmama's a righty. Get it up. Love LJ. He was a beast before he got hurt. Before LJ hurt his back.
LJ was the man.
He was freakish.
And he was turning into like a brand too.
He was.
Right.
Yeah.
Like a star.
Oh, God, yeah. He had Converse, you know, with the whole Grandmama thing. What'd you say, Mike?
That 4-point, and I'm not a Knicks fan, but that 4-point play he hit
with the roof,
Knicks
the guard almost
against
went
the
off.
Pacers in the playoffs. Geez. I mean, they're down by three. He hits the shot, banks it in, gets fouled.
He runs
and
to
that
the other
overhead
end of the court.
View of the garden where everyone rises.
Yeah,
oh, my
sick.
God. That was the coolest
that was great.
Shot I've ever seen of an NBA arena.
He runs to the other end of the court, and Chris Childs ran after him and said, hey, bro, you got to still hit this free throw. Let's go back down the other end. I saw a little Larry Johnson. I saw a little Dominique Wilkins, who you mentioned earlier, but more from the waist down. The one thing that Dominique had as a dunker was great, first of all, great power. And his legs, if you remember those mid-80s dunk-offs with MJ and Dominique, the one year Dominique got absolutely hosed, he beat MJ, and they gave it to MJ. They had very different leg action. Like, MJ's would kind of dangle
they
looked great.
Yeah, I hear what you
but Dominique was more like bang. And I see a lot of Dominique in him. And
yeah,
I also see
he's
Sean
quick.
Kemp.
Yeah.
Larry Johnson, Sean Kemp, and Dominique.
Because he's long. He's got those gargantuan arms.
Strong, though. Yeah. You know, the thing about Sean Kemp, I don't know that Larry Johnson had this even pre-back injury. Dominique did a little bit for sure. The thing that a young Sean Kemp had that people forget, and I don't mean when he had that ugly Cavaliers jersey on with the powder blue when he was playing with Terrell Brandon when Seattle got rid of him. I mean early Sean Kemp with the Seattle Supersonics. He would jump. And I know it's physically impossible. Like, this does not happen. Yeah. Much like a fastball does not rise. Physically, it's impossible, even though it gives the illusion that it does. He would jump, and then midair, it looked like he would kind of jump on a trampoline
like elevate.
And hit a second level.
I hear you.
Like, it was incredible.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And a lot of that was when he would contact somebody.
Uh-huh.
He just has, like, certain people have body awareness where they can lift themselves just by subtly touching someone else. That's what he would do.
And this is what this kid does. He's got it. Now,
in addition to being able to jump nearly to the top of the backboard.
I don't even know what is his vertical leap at this point?
I don't know.
Let me see. I got NBA draft up here.
The biggest thing, and you mentioned this, BT, is he's 280.
Yep.
But a lot of that is in his lower body.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's, you know, a top heavy and carrying all of his weight up top, which then compromises his lower body.
Yeah, right? That's a good point.
That's the reason he can jump so
high. It's pretty
well
proportioned throughout his body.
It's perfectly proportioned.
I would agree with that.
And so he should be able to stay healthy, which is something that a lot of guys on this Duke team haven't been able to do. Now, Trey Jones played a little bit. We mentioned this briefly. So were we concerned about this loss to Syracuse? Because Syracuse is, I mean, it's Boeheim.
They've lost some ugly games this year.
I agree. They're not.
They lose, I think, the ODU at home.
Yeah.
Not that the Monarchs are terrible, but Syracuse is supposed to win that
exactly.
game.
Exactly. And so are we worried that Duke lost this game? And the answer is probably no, because of Trey Jones being hurt and Cam Reddish was – I don't know if he even played.
He didn't play.
He was sick.
He had the flu. So he knocks down the winner over the weekend.
Yeah.
That's a quick turnaround for Saturday, Monday.
I know it.
And a lot of teams, Saturday, Monday's tough
in
college.
It's rough.
And Duke was on the road.
I know it. So you're not used to it.
Yeah.
So while this was an impressive win for Syracuse, it's not an unimpressive loss, I guess you could say, for Duke. It's circumstances, especially because their team is still so young,
yep.
especially with those guys out.
I'll tell you what, though. You know, and Ack, do you have an update on Trey Jones? I know it's shoulder joint.
There's nothing new.
There's varying reports. I mean, it could be 12 weeks. It could be a lot quick. It could be a lot quick. The AC joint, I believe.
Wow, 12 weeks. Wow, that's a long time.
Without Trey Jones, it wouldn't surprise me if these guys lost in the second round of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
They're molding into a team for sure. Yeah. But Trey Jones is their best defender.
Of course.
And he's their facilitator.
Yep. Assist to turnover ratio is one of the best in the country right now. I mean, he's the guy. It's not who we talk about because we want to talk about R.J. Barrett and Zion Williams and even Cam Reddish. But it's this kid that makes it go, man.
Unsung hero. Your boys have a tough one tonight, right? Playing Vatek?
They do, Vatek tonight.
Well, one of your former coaches, Pete Gillen, who we love, of course, part of the CBS crew and analyst, CBS Sports Network and CBS Sports. He will join us coming up next. And maybe Pete has some intel on what the hell these net rankings mean. Like, what is the data behind the net rankings and just how seriously will they be used during Selection Sunday? So we'll talk about that, get his thoughts on all college hoops, including Duke's situation. Maybe he's got a better comparison.
Yeah.
We'll find out. And that's coming up next. We've got Pete after Ack's update, which is right now. Here's Rich Ackerman. All right, Tiki and Tierney back. We'll do a little more college hoops here coming up in a second. Our buddy Pete Gillen, CBS Sports, part of the family. But first up, Player of the Week, brought to you by Grainger. Take a look at somebody who's getting it done, has been for a while. How about James Harden? Quite frankly, could have done Harden last month or so. Last night against the Grizz, Harden, the second player in NBA history to drop 30 or more points in 17 straight. Only Wilt Chamberlain. Wow. Jordan didn't do it. The Iceman didn't do it. AI didn't do it. Alex Inglis didn't do it. Carmelo didn't do it. Young Carmelo. No great scorer. Kobe. Nobody. MJ. Only Wilt with a longer streak with 20 back in 1964. Of course, Harden did it in style last night. He scored 36 in the first half. And he pumped in 57 on the game. Player of the Week brought to you by Grainger. Grainger's got your back when it's come to time for safety and industrial supplies that keep your facility running. Get what you need when you need it at Grainger.com. All right, Teague, our next guest. You know, it's easy to forget, maybe easy to forget that this guy coached. I mean, and by the way, he was pretty good. Nearly 400 wins, won nearly 65% of his games, which is terrific. Terrific stints at Xavier. Providence Friars, Tiki's Virginia Cavaliers as well. That is Pete Gillen, who's now an analyst and always fun, always witty. Coach, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Good, Brandon and Tiki. Great to be with you guys. How you doing?
Awesome. Our pleasure. Let's talk some shop. We have a lot of team and player-specific things, but I know that you probably need multiple degrees to actually answer this and maybe an abacus and a protractor as well. What the hell are the net rankings? Like, what can you tell us in layman terminology? What are the net rankings? What do they mean?
Well, I'll try, Brandon and Tiki. First, I was experimental admissions in college, so I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer.
Experimental admission. See what I mean?
What it means... And what happened, and the experiment died. When I went there and got out, you know, it took me 6.5 years of my life for undergraduate. But what net means, first of all, the new system replacing the RPI is N for NCAA, E evaluation, T for tool. So the NCAA evaluation tool. And what it means, and this is just a general thing, it's just very complicated. Big things they want, road wins, super important. Next thing, you want to play good opponents, right? A lot of teams play a horrible non-conference schedule. They play supermarkets. They play funeral homes. They play families. They play tattoo parlors. They don't play anybody. You know, they win by 60 points, so that doesn't help them at all. They want to play good opponents.
Mm-hmm.
And location, obviously, is important, where you play that person, that team. Is it neutral? Is it away? And 10-point wins are important, Brandon. In other words, if you win by 20 or 25, it still goes back to 10. So if you got a 10-point win, that's significant. And the last thing is it's called adjusted win percentage. Adjusted win percentage. What that means simply is, if you beat somebody at home, it's important, but you get 0.6 of a point. But if you beat somebody on the road, you get more than double it. You get 1.4 points. You know what I mean? You get like double. Road wins are super, super important. And if you win at a neutral, you get 1 point. So, and that depends on how good the team is, and it's another, you know, another percentage, and another thing is factored in. But the main thing is that road wins, what I'm trying to say, is super important now.
Yeah.
Brandon, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And 10-point wins, you know, if you win by 20, it just counts as 10. They don't want you to run it up. But 10-point wins is significant. And who you play. They want, you know, once again, some of these teams, they play very poor non-conference, so that doesn't help. And if your league is down, that doesn't help you either. You know what I mean? So
Pete, let me ask you this, because the margin of victory is the one thing that I find really interesting, because in one sentence, and I know that you're right about this, they certainly do place great value, as they should, on how you challenge yourself as a program, what schedule you play. But also, you can beat up on 20 funeral homes and 20 pizza parlors, whatever. If you're 20-0 in theory and you win every game by 10-plus points, might you be higher placed at a team that's 15-5 that's played tougher teams?
No, because they put other factor in how good is your opponent. You know, what is their net? What is their NCAA evaluation tool?
Okay.
You know, I mean, what is there? So if you're beating a quality team like a Syracuse, you know, or an NC State, that's much more important. And I won't mention, you know, a weaker team that, you know what I mean, that's in the
gotcha.
Bottom 350. So that goes in. That's another, you know, characteristic, of course, that I didn't talk. But it's a complicated system, but it's the closest to the NCAA panel of picking, you know, the selection committee. It's the closest to that. So,
but will they use this on, Pete, will they use on Selection Sunday? How much of a factor will the net rankings be?
That's a
very
good
high.
Wow.
They're going out the RPI. This is going to be the one. And I just gave you part of it. I couldn't give you everything.
I got you.
It would take you 2 weeks, and you'd have to have a degree from Harvard and MIT and a master's from Stanford to understand everything. But, you know, that's the basic thing, is that road wins are super important. The non-league schedule and your conference schedule is so important. The better your lead, right, the better chances. That's why the Big Ten is going to 20 games, I believe, this year. You know what I mean? Because now these teams are got a higher net, right? So when you beat them, they get a chance to get more teams in the Big Ten. So basically is they want teams to play better teams, better competition, you know, out of the league and hopefully in the league if your league does well. So that's important, Brandon and Tiki, that your league does well in November and December. You know what I mean? So your net rating is higher. So when you beat them in regular season, it helps a lot. So I think it's good. I think it puts more emphasis on playing good people, good opponents, tough opponents, right, and playing on getting some road wins. Because the road wins are so hard to get, you know, in conference play especially.
Okay, good job with that. I think we're all a little mystified, a little bit of a little perplexed, not really knowing exactly what it meant. I thought that was a good description. That's Pete Gillen, of course. Pete, former coach at Xavier Providence, and, of course, Tiki's Virginia Cavaliers. He was there for a bunch of years as well, and he's with us here on Tiki and Tierney.
Pete, so we had this conversation yesterday about John Beilein and why, out of all the great coaches in college basketball, they're currently the Michigan Wolverines sitting at 17-0. They don't play again until Saturday against Wisconsin, but they're playing fantastic basketball. You can't really name their stars. How come we don't give him as much credit as he deserves? Because he's always got his teams playing exactly where an elite program should be.
Yeah, good question, Tiki. I mean, he's a great coach. You know, he was never an assistant coach. He started, you know, coaching a head coach. He was, you know, all over the place. You know, he was at Lemoyne College up in Syracuse and Canisius in Richmond and West Virginia. So I coached against him several times. But he's just a coach's coach. He's not a guy that pushes himself. He just rolls up his sleeves. He's not a guy who stepped out of Fortune 500 magazine, you know, with the cologne and the mousse on and, you know, no nose hairs and stuff like that. He's just a coach, and he doesn't push himself. You know, he's not flamboyant. You know, he's not one of those guys that, you know, always pounds his chest. But he runs a great system. You know, it's a really spread you out 2-3 high, and he runs screens, and he gets good players. And he's getting some players now from Europe, from Michigan and Germany, places like that. Should be from Germany and overseas and Austria. So he's a terrific coach, but he's just under the radar, you know, and just a quiet guy. He's got good personality, but he's not, you know, Mr. Electricity, you know, like a Tom Izzo. You know, he's very volatile and emotional, everything like that. And he does a great job, mainly with his offense. You know, they really spread you out. They work a lot on their shooting and spacing, and they take great care of the basketball. So he does a fabulous job. Like I said, his whole is better than the individual parts. His parts are good, but he puts them together tremendously.
Yeah. I want to stay in the top four with you and a team that obviously we're both very intimate with, you and I, that is, because my alma mater, you coach there as well. The University of Virginia takes on Virginia Tech tonight. And this is not about Tony Bennett, because we all know the story of UVA and how they play and slow down. But Buzz Williams and this job that he's done with the Hokies, one of the few teams really over, maybe the only team over the last couple of years that can say they've beaten Virginia each of the last 3 years. They're currently in the top 10. It's a heck of a job that Buzz has done down there on the other end of the state of Virginia.
No, he has. They play great defense. I mean, it's going to be a rock fight tonight. It's going to be, you know, first team to 45 wins, I think. But he does a great job. He's got a veteran team. He was at my camp when I was the head coach at Xavier many years ago. I didn't even know he was there.
Oh, wow.
He was a counselor. You know, I was in and out. He was there the first day and the last day. It was during recruiting time, you know what I mean? So I wasn't.
Well, you were just getting paid. Yeah, you were getting paid. You didn't have to do much.
I got to pay the ham sandwich each week. I had a bad deal with the school. I didn't really understand all the stuff in the contract. But he does a wonderful job. I mean, he sweats more than anybody. I used to sweat pretty good when I coached. I couldn't out-sweat Gary Williams, the head coach of Maryland. But yeah. Buzz Williams sweats. He's like a great sweater. But they play great D, you know, very physical. They're a veteran team. So it should be a great game tonight. I think Virginia will win, but I think it'll be a low-scoring, hard-nosed game. You know, but he does a wonderful job, and he's certainly underrated because Virginia Tech's a great school, but speaking of so well, they're mainly known for football.
Yep.
You know, basketball, young men don't dream of going to, you know, to play at Virginia Tech, even though it's a fine school. So I give him a lot of credit. He came from Marquette, and he's done a great job there, mainly with his defense. He's grit and tough. Now, his schedule, you know, he hasn't played who's who, put it that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I won't mention, you know, who they play, but there might have been a couple of supermarkets in there somewhere.
Woody, help us out with a comparison for Zion Williamson. We heard what Boeheim said last night. We played it here on the show. Myself, I see an odd combination of a little Larry Johnson, a little Sean Kemp, a little Dominique Wilkins, the power dunk, and almost like a Calbert Chaney jump shot from Indiana. That's the best that I can, you know, muster up at this point. Who do you see when you see Zion Williamson?
I think a little bit. You hit it. Larry Johnson, I think he's like grandmama. He was a great athlete. You know, I think Zion might be a little bit bigger. And Sean Kemp. Sean had springs. I coached with him on a dream team number two back in 1994. Don Nelson Sr. was the head coach, and Sean Kemp was on that team, you know, and they used to call him the Rain Man.
Oh, yeah.
And one time I was in an elevator with him, and I know him a little bit, so I used to work at Notre Dame for a while, and he lived from Mishawaka, Indiana. And I said, "His coach, you see how it looks outside?" I said, "No," he says, "Coach, it's raining. My nickname's the Rain Man. I always play good in the rain." So I says, "Well, Sean, how about when it's sunny? How do you play?" He says, "Rain Man plays great, rain or shine."
And of course,
Rain Man.
The Rain Man. What a nickname. Oh, my God. He was so good for a couple years.
He was a great athlete, terrific young man. But I agree. I think he's a little bit of a Sean Kemp and a Larry Johnson. I think that's a great analogy. Those two, I mean, he's unbelievable.
When was the last time we saw a college player feel this dominant?
I can't remember one for a while. I mean, he's special.
I got one for you, and I'm forgetting his name, but I could. He went ahead of Kevin Durant in the draft, the big man from Ohio State, Greg Oden. At least in college, he had that dominant. He felt like he looked like he was 30.
Yeah,
and he had a physical, a physical dominance over his peers. He didn't make it in the NBA. He was hurt. But to your question, had that physicality without parallel.
You just
back
forget
then.
Him. He loses your mind because he didn't go to the
didn't
next
make
level.
It. Yeah. Didn't make it.
What's the shame? Yeah, it was a shame. But he wasn't quite as athletic, I don't think, as Zion Williams.
I didn't mean from an athletic. I just meant from like carving out space or just having sheer dominance over. Definitely, he wasn't very athletic at all.
He was a great player.
No doubt. Give us about 20 seconds before we bounce, and unfortunately we're up against it. Otherwise, we would do another 5 minutes with Pete Gillen, CBS Sports colleague, of course, great analyst and terrific coach back in the day. Give us the conference that gets a lot of love and is one of the power conferences, but Pete Gillen thinks is a little overrated right now. Who jumps out?
Ooh, good question. That's a good question.
Take your time. Not too long, though.
Yeah. I think right now, I think, I think the Big 12 is a little overrated right now. I think it's good. Everybody, you know, pumps their tires, but I think Texas is a little bit down. Oklahoma State's a little bit down. Mm-hmm. You know, some of these, Baylor's a little down. You know, they always praise it, and Kansas is unbelievable, of course, but I think the Big 12 is one that, you know, everybody says one or two, you know, but three. But I think SEC's great this year. I think they deserve their accolades. They're in the top, I think, three or four for sure. I did a couple of SEC games. But I think the Big 12 is a little bit, you know, Kansas State's been a little bit disappointing. You know, they were in an Elite Eight, I believe, last year. And so I'd say that the Big 12, it's a good league for sure, but I think it's a little overrated.
Coach, we got 10 seconds to spare. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks a lot, Pete.
God, thank you, guys.
It was awesome. Great stuff. Pete Gillen, he's one of a kind. He is one of a kind. Third hour coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you.
I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.